that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead. But the fact is, it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
I don't know. I always thought of Hunter as a real ass kiss. He had his nose so far up Vince's ass that, and Sean's, and like he was never a straight guy.
I hope he sues me. As a matter of fact, Vince Russo, if you ever seen this, sue my fucking ass and suck my dick while you're at it.
Talk about your Psalms. Talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says I just whipped your ass.
I thought it was mediocre at best, and then maybe a 4 out of 10 or 3 out of 10.
Paul, say something stupid.
I'm going to tell you all with a tear in my eye. This is the greatest moment in my life. Woo!
Hulk Hogan, we're coming for you, nigga!
Hogan got his belt and he went the hell home, and I promise everybody or else I'll go in the goddamn grave. You will never see that piece of shit again.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you, John Cena.
Nope.
Hello, curtain jerkers. I am Jeremy Staples, and with me, as always, is Brett. Hey, say hi, Brett.
We're here. We're queer. We know it.
We are very queer. We've actually had a little bit of technical difficulties leading up to this. I was going to go alone, but it was yammering and stuttering like an artard, to be honest. So we doing a little reset here. Yeah. Well, I guess let's get right into the show. Raw last night.
Yes.
I missed probably the first hour and 5 minutes. I actually started out with the Cena promo that everybody's bitching about, where basically, you know, makes fun of indie wrestlers and pretty much anybody who's actually struggled out there on the indie scene. That's the gist of what I'm getting from that. What did you think of what he had to say?
You know, I kind of feel that, too. I felt like it was almost a heelish promo, and, you know, everybody on the internet's been begging for him to go heel. As much as they say he's boring and they hate him, everybody will watch a heel turn. But it's unfortunate because you know they're not going to do that, so he's not really turning heel. He's kind of just, like you said, burying anybody who's really struggled out there in the wrestling industry. So it was kind of fucked.
Yes, yes. Then we'll see what else happened in this thing. Brian came out towards the end, correct? Or no, or was it Randy Orton who came out first?
I think, man, I don't remember.
Okay, it was Randy Orton.
I'm catching
Orton.
Up right now.
Yeah,
he came out, yes.
Yeah, with the briefcase, basically letting Cena know he's still a target. And then the Shield enter, surround the ring.
That's right.
Orton's going to defend. That's when Brian came out to make, you know, the big save, the big bearded save. And after that, my good buddy Brad Maddox comes out and makes it a six-man, like a true white little skinny Teddy Long, turn into a tag match for the main event.
It was kind of telegraphed a little bit there. Once Shield came out, you kind of knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Somebody last night said a white short Teddy Long, and I'm like, Teddy Long's already pretty fucking short. Like, come on.
Yeah, and sorry, I'm still a little under the weather. I've been having a cough for like the last 3 weeks, and it's really starting to piss me off here.
I hear you.
So after that, Wyatt family in there with their in-ring Raw debut against Tons of Funk. Short match, total squash, of course, which they should be doing right now with the Wyatts, you know, make them look, you know, big and, you know, like a formidable tag team. After that, Bray comes in, lays out Bros Clay with his sister Abigail finisher, with that you do not like. correct?
Nope.
We actually should probably get the nope sound effect queued up for the show so we can just, you know, hit it whenever we need to.
Yeah, that's probably a really good idea.
Yeah. Well, so after that, you know, Wyatt cuts his promo. Then the you know, the sheet mask flashes on the screen, thinking, you know, the segment's over, it's gonna cut to commercial, but no. Kane's pyro goes off, and we get the return of Kane in a backstage clip. They kind of alluded to this match at SummerSlam possibly being an Inferno match.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. You know, there's been very, very few of them. Kane's been involved in all of them. But it's not something they bring out very often. So I'm very pleasantly surprised.
Yes. The only concern I have with that is this is going to be Kane and Wyatt's first one-on-one match. Why do they need to rush to a stipulation? You know, it seems just like they're moving along just a little bit too fast with this. So what's the pay-per-view after SummerSlam now, September? Is it still Night of Champions? I don't give a fuck. I don't know. Anyway, so I would build it up to, you know, maybe a later pay-per-view, but, you know, I'm not in charge, so what the fuck do I know?
I don't remember which pay-per-views come after which either, but I don't know. I'm happy. We don't need a regular match first. I don't think SummerSlam. I kind of like the gimmick matches every now and then, and there wasn't really a whole lot else going on there as far as gimmicks go. So I'm happy to be getting a special match type for this, even if it's like his first match.
Yeah, well, it's at this point, though, it's going to have to be like a one-and-done kind of thing. Like, after an Inferno match, where do they go? You know,
I'm sticking with my theory that Kane is going to join the Wyatts. He's going to kind of be almost like their dog.
I've seen you saying that in the past, and I could see that. I think it would be a good fit. It would kind of ruin the aura of the Wyatts. Kane doesn't really fit in there. But it kind of reminds me of back in, I think it was 98, it was the end of 98, because I remember I went to a Raw up here in the Seattle area, where Kane was a forced member of the corporation, Vince McMahon's corporation, and he was basically the same there. He was a lack dog, and Jerry Briscoe would put Briscoe's brother's body shop signs on Kane's back and use them as a walking billboard. So, I mean, I could see it happening, I guess. It's kind of harken back to that in a way.
Don't lie. You know you want to see Kane in a sheet mask. His own little personalized, a spot open for the mouth, all red and black sheep. You would love it.
Oh, I would probably come all over my laptop screen, which I have many a raw. You know, but my laptop still has not recovered from the great Ambrose debut of 2012. So, yeah. Anyway, moving on. After that, we had a backstage segment with Punk talking about his match with Curtis Axel. Yada yada yada. Not a whole lot was said there, so we'll just kind of move on.
Caitlin versus I was outside.
Yeah. Caitlin versus Layla. It was a Divas match. They were kind of building off the story. It started off this last week on SmackDown where Layla turned heel and joined up with AJ. I don't know what gets her Scissor Sisters now or something. I'm okay with that. AJ, you know, with the big distraction, allowing Layla get the win. And then Layla and AJ skip away together. That's awesome. All right. Christian versus Heath Slater. I don't really remember watching this match, honestly. I don't. I remember Christian coming to the ring.
I remember the ending, and that was about it.
Yeah, we were kind of tuning out at this point on the show.
It was a pretty lackluster show.
It was. They're definitely in a holding pattern leading into SummerSlam. They don't want to like blow their load too fast with 2 weeks to go. Which I get, I guess, but for me, it's hard for me to get into these shows when I, you know, miss the first hour. You know, I come in late, you know, I don't really, it's like a hurry to, you know, get set up, you know, so I can, you know, chat in with all my friends at facebook.com/group/kayfabecorner, where we have the Raw threads each and every week, one for the East Coast showing here in the United States and one for the West Coast that has been kicking ass on the East Coast thread for a couple months now, and which I am very, very proud to say.
East Coast versus West Coast.
Yeah. But that has a lot to do with us, you know, because it's really more than just Best Coast. It's Pacific Northwest, you know.
Absolutely.
It's all about that. Yeah, definitely. The best of the Best Coast.
Absolutely. Yeah, fuck California.
Yeah, fuck them. All right, so next up after that was CM Punk versus Curtis Axel. Good match. It was pretty good for a Raw match, I'll say. I didn't expect them to go to it already, which I don't know why I didn't, because they're not really doing anything with McGillicuddy, even though, okay, sorry, with Axel.
Boo! Banned! Boo!
I know. I might as well just have, you know, threw in a Husky Harris. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Van hammered.
Anyway, it was a good match. See, how'd that end, though? It was a DQ?
You know, I don't even remember the bell ringing.
It just kind of ended.
It was when Punk grabbed Heyman. I think Punk got DQ'd for that, which was kind of awkward.
Why would that have been a DQ?
I
was just...
They didn't. It says that they didn't announce a winner, and I don't remember announcing one. But then
yeah.
We got our little Punk versus Brock showdown, and man, I am so excited for this match. If it wasn't for the fact that it's Daniel Bryan for the WWE title in the main event, I would be really upset that this wasn't getting top billing at SummerSlam.
Yes, definitely. I do like it. This time they actually gave, you know, Punk a little bit of offense before he ended up eating an F5. So, you know, he's, you know, slowly, you know, showing that he can, you know, fight from underneath, and, you know, the underdog could possibly take down, you know, the beast Brock Lesnar. That was pretty cool. I'm really hoping that their next encounter, if they do have one before SummerSlam, that this time Punk gets to lay out Lesnar for, you know, for once. Yeah, get the, maybe like end the show with, you know, Punk standing over Lesnar, like, hey, I can do this. I can beat him at SummerSlam, you know, because there's a lot of naysayers out there. See, it's a fucking huge size difference. It's kind of crazy when you think about it. It's going to be a great match.
No, yeah, and I don't know. Like, I would definitely like to see that as well, but I'm a firm believer in opposite momentum, whereas basically whoever is standing on top of the go-home show is generally probably going to lose at the pay-per-view. The more I think about this match, the more I think they might put Lesnar over. Like, Punk seems like the pretty obvious choice to go with, but at the same time, WWE likes to try to fool what they know everybody else is thinking. So, I don't know.
Yes, definitely. You always have to expect the unexpected with WWE. They like to throw curveballs at you, even at the detriment of the stories they're trying to tell. They like to shoot themselves in the foot that way, but you never know. I would like to see Punk come out the winner, but this is also another case where I would love it to go to another match. I don't think it needs to be a one-and-done thing. It is a personal issue that should be dragged out. It's probably the, you know, of course it is. It's the second, you know, biggest storyline going on in WWE right now underneath the Cena and Daniel Bryan feud. So, yeah, give them some time. Let them show off what they can do. And in the end, put Punk over like fucking he's never been put over. He didn't get to beat The Undertaker, but, you know, he can take down, the Beast.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the other thing is, you know, Punk has lost the last two big feuds. He lost the title with The Rock, and then he lost the Taker at WrestleMania. So he's kind of due for a win, I guess, a big win in a feud.
Yes, definitely. After that, we go to the promo, the now infamous promo where Brock Lesnar actually got lost in what he was trying to say. He said he was the best of the best of the best, and he's the best, and he's the beast. And then he sends it to Paul Heyman by, like, now say something stupid. Like, what the fuck? And Heyman's look on Heyman's face, he's just standing there just like, I'm not going to say something stupid. Brock can, like, unintentional comedy.
I love Brock on the mic because it's so bad it's good. Like,
yeah.
It's not even like, oh, this is horrible, I'm going to change the channel. It's like, hell no, I'm going to watch this. It's fucking horrible.
Say something stupid, indeed. That should be the name of this show. Say something stupid.
I really, really want us to get a Brock soundbite because it's my favorite. The one from his last match, I think, with Triple H was just the best.
Yes, yes. I think maybe like we should even like I'll put together a compilation of like all the like, these well-known things that these sayings and stuff, these little sound bites, and we'll use it for our new intro. How about that?
Absolutely.
I totally piece that together. After that, we had Fandango versus the returning Kofi Kingston. Kofi raided X-Pac's wardrobe, took his tights, and I guess he's trying to freshen up his look a little bit, which is he's needed. We all know he's needed. He's stale. But still,
Thank you for finally agreeing with me on that.
Yes, yes. What I have been saying forever is they need to turn this guy heel. Let him give him some mic time. Let him develop a personality, and all that goes away. Like I think he has it in him.
Yeah, they need to do something with him. So, I mean, he's definitely impressive in the ring. I think there's kind of the Rey Mysterio John Cena effect where I start feeling like every one of his matches is the same. But I mean, he's done some crazy stuff at like the Rumble and whatnot. And every now and then he busts out something really good. I'd like to see a little bit more of that, I guess. The character, yeah, is stale, but I don't mind a stale character if their matches are actually entertaining. And to me, Kofi's haven't been for quite a while.
Yeah. Next up we go to, backstage with Stephanie and Vince in a backstage stage segment with Triple H. This is totally alluding to the first segment of the show, which did you not watch it? I know I didn't. You did not get to see it either?
I missed the first half hour.
Okay, so you didn't see the makeover segment. And the gist of what happened in that was they wanted Brian to shave his beard. They sat him on a barber's chair. Like, here, you're going to be our corporate champion, basically. It's total retread of what they did with Steve Austin right after he won the WWF title back in 1998. When Austin came out in the suit and tie and all that. This time it was Daniel Bryan in the suit with his hair tied back, and they're going to make him shave his beard. So that didn't end up going down. What ended up happening is Wade Barrett came out because I guess he was going to be the one to shave the beard for him. Barrett ends up in the chair, and they shaved off the side of his beard, Daniel Bryan did, instead. So I guess that's what happened there. I don't know what to say. Like, I didn't get to see it for myself. It's total retread.
Yeah.
All right, so next up. Yeah. Next up was the Real Americans versus the Usos. I don't really remember anything in this match. Once again,
the only thing I really remember was it seemed like the Usos were actually starting to get over with the crowd, which, I mean, some of the crowd's kind of always been into them, and I think that was kind of a pretty lively crowd last night, at least relatively. It was no fuck Brooklyn, but it was no Brooklyn. I don't know. I've been wanting the tag team division to get better for a long time. Apparently Triple H is pushing for it. It's kind of sad to not see the Usos go over when they really could use a push, but if Cesaro gets a push out of this, I'm happy. I can't complain too much.
Yes, yes, indeed. Hopefully they'll, I would so much rather see them bring up Cassius Ohno and, you know, pair them up again like they used to be in Ring of Honor. They're such a good tag team, but I know that right now Ono's in the doghouse because his workout regimen isn't living up to the standards of WWE and Triple H in particular. So hopefully he'll, you know, get out of the doghouse and maybe they can pair them up eventually one day. Did you ever see much of the their stuff in Ring of Honor?
No, you know, I never really went back and watched, like, actual Ring of Honor episodes. I just go back and watch, like, Daniel Bryan and CM Punk's matches and Samoa Joe and, you know, the guys I already knew that are kind of established. So a lot of those guys that are on the ROH scene that have made a big splash on national TV. I don't know a whole lot about.
Yeah, I would say definitely give that a look. Sometimes there's some good stuff there. They were a great tag team together. A lot of chemistry between those two. Yeah. So next up was the Dolph Ziggler Biggie Langston match. It was really short. The end came where Caitlin and AJ were fighting on the outside. Their fight spilled into the ring. Out of nowhere, Big E is able to get the momentum back and hits the big ending for the win. I don't understand why they're putting this match out on Raw and why it's so short. It doesn't do anything for Dolph Ziggler. It seemed like it was more about the Divas feud.
At this point, I hate to say it, but it is more about the Divas. This is more AJ's storyline than it is Dolph's. Dolph's getting a huge D push after winning the title, and seemed like we were going to have, you know, kind of the year of Dolph, as it were. And he's just getting screwed back down the card. I wouldn't be surprised to even see him lose at SummerSlam.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Next up, the main event, the six-man tag was The Shield against John Cena, Daniel Bryan, and Randy Orton. Another not very long match, one that they could have done a lot more with, especially with how hot Daniel Bryan has been.
I think they were definitely time-crunched last night. This match didn't even start till 11, like, on the dot. And, yeah, they usually have 5 minutes overrun. But, you know, the ending is going to be the last two or three full minutes of the ending is going to be everybody after the match standing around and basically trying to build towards next week, looking fondly at each other.
Yes, yes. The end of this match came with the Shield being DQ'd because they all jumped in the ring to break up the Yes Lock. So Shield is DQ'd. Daniel Bryan is celebrating in the ring with Cena. They're doing the Yes chant. Orton then comes, you know, out of nowhere with an RKO, like, you know, his trademark is, you know, vintage Orton. Cena and Orton have a stare down. Shield comes back. Orton and Cena fight them off. And then it's all about the briefcase at that point. I am dreading the fact that they're going to put the title on Bryan only to have Orton, you know, come in at the last minute at SummerSlam and end up taking the belt. If they do that, I am going to be fucking pissed off. That's the only thing I can say about that.
I fully expect it to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you were saying earlier, you know, it does feel a little telegraphed, and they are kind of building into the story that Orton could cash in. And at the same time, you know, you said earlier they like to kind of fool people to their detriment sometimes, shoot themselves in the foot. Sometimes it works out really well. Maybe, you know, Bryan will just barely squeak out the win against Cena and actually win the belt, and Orton will come out and we'll be like, fuck, 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 fuck. And then somehow Bryan will pull out the win, and for the second year in a row, the WWE contract holder failed to cash in. Last year it was Cena. This year it could be Orton. Like, you never know, man.
Yeah. They're definitely starting to, you know, show Orton more of a heelish manner now. Seems like they're finally doing that long-awaited heel push with him. Because in the end, he actually left the ring when the Shield returned and basically allowed them to destroy Cena and Bryan, you know, as he slinked away with his Money in the Bank briefcase. Yeah, it's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say about it. I'm not a huge Orton fan, especially this character. Heel or not, like the whole when he started, you know, punting people in the head and all that stuff, like I tuned out. Like he just became so boring to me at that point.
I've always felt like when Orton's walking to the ring, the look he's got on his face, kind of looking down his nose at everybody, you can kind of tell he likes the smell of his own shit. Like he wafts it in and really, like, really, really enjoys it.
Yeah, well, he's, you know, one of those rare. Like he's almost royalty because of his you know, third generation status, and he's so ingrained in the WWE. Even though he's sitting with two strikes against him, so he shouldn't be, you know, getting too comfortable. But still, he has that certain air about him, like you said. And I don't know. Anyway, let's move on from Raw.
One more thing I wanted to touch on before we're done.
Go ahead.
Is that CM Punk was minorly injured on Raw last night. I kind of caught it during his brawl with Brock. He was bleeding underneath his chin, had to get 4 stitches. It was weird because, you know, exiting WrestleMania, facing Undertaker, you know, everybody said he was kind of banged up and everything, but he didn't have any, like, real injuries. And, you know, this is pretty minor. It's just a few stitches. But it seems like he's getting injured almost every single week. I think it's starting to show, like, this guy really needs to take a lot longer of a break.
Well, yeah, well, those two injuries, though, were, like, accidental things. It was, you know, one, the, you know, his, the staples he got in his head at the pay-per-view at Money in the
Bank. And he hurt his ankle.
Yes,
his ankle
was
swollen up to, like, the size of a fucking orange.
Yes, yes. And we're still kind of confused of whether or not that happened at the pay-per-view or if it happened during the initial brawl with Lesnar when he was maybe when he was tossed over the table or something. I don't know. But yeah, I know he is at.
I wouldn't mind seeing him, you know, get maybe another month off or so after SummerSlam, like just a little bit. He was gone for a while last time, and it still felt like he came back a little bit too early. Because, I mean, the guy does deserve a fucking break.
What I was thinking is just take him off house shows.
Yeah. You know, people want to see him, though. People are going to feel he's definitely, like, one of the top two guys. Like, you know, no matter what you say, Cena is kind of the top guy. But he's definitely right up there with him. And so to have him on TV every week and then not have him at the house shows, I think he'd have a lot of people upset. Like, imagine taking John Cena off house shows. Like, that's not going to fly with people.
Yeah, we don't need little kid riots if Cena was ever taken off. Jesus Christ, can you imagine all those...
No, not riots. Not like there's going to be a huge internet backlash or anything. But I guarantee you they'll suffer ticket sales. Because think about how many parents, you know, take all their kids. You know, they got to buy tickets for the whole family when it's just like the one kid that wants to go. That's a lot of money they'd be losing.
It's true. That's true. All right. So, moving on from Raw. I want to quickly touch on the biggest story of the week this week, and that is the DWI arrest of Kurt Angle. Fourth in 6 years, or am I getting the math wrong?
Something like that. You might be a little off, but
it's
4 years.
I don't know. It's something like that.
It's four. I know the number's four, but I'm not sure it's in 6 years. I'm not sure how many years it is, but it's his fourth.
Yes, yes. All I got to say is, like, Jesus Christ, this guy, it appears he is now, I don't know if he is now, but I know he is on his way to rehab.
No, he's in rehab. He's entered.
He is in. Okay, he is in there now.
He is
okay,
in.
That's good. There's I can't think of a better place for this guy. He needs to. Honestly, I would say he needs to hang it up. I don't think a TNA schedule, which is extremely lax compared to WWE's. I just don't know if his body can handle it, and if he's having to, use alcohol or drugs to, you know, mask the pain that he's in, then maybe he needs to, find something else to do with his life.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, Kurt was always, like, one of my favorites growing up. I watched a lot of SmackDown, and he was on SmackDown a whole lot. He's definitely, in my opinion, one of the best ever. But you're right. He kind of is at the point he needs to hang it up. If he can't go without popping pills or driving drunk constantly, which is a huge dick move, like fuck that and fuck you, then it's time to quit. Look at all the other guys his age, Brock, even RVD, who's still been on just about every week, but supposedly he's supposed to have a somewhat lighter schedule than the rest of the roster. Like, that's the kind of thing if he's not going to stop. But at the same time, I feel like he's the kind of guy who feels like he has the weight of TNA on his shoulders. Even if, you know, he's not necessarily like their top guy and their number one, because they don't really fucking have one beyond Hogan and Sting. He, in his mind, he is. And he thinks that he's got to make this company succeed or they're going to go under.
Yeah. And that was actually going to be my next point, is that this all throws a big kink into the main storyline that's going on in TNA with the main event Mafia headed up by Kurt Angle going up against Aces and Eights. And this is something that they have been building on, and it's actually leading up to the they're going to be doing another one of those special impacts like they just did with the Destination X. They're going to be doing a Hardcore Justice episode of Impact. Where I guess it's supposed to be a street fight between those two factions. If I'm remembering this right, this is the way that they've been going. And so that puts a huge kink in all of this. I don't think that this whole angle is supposed to be the be-all, end-all as far as Aces and Eights is concerned. I think that that will begin to happen once. I still firmly believe that Bully Ray is going to get the title back. He's going to go on to Bound for Glory and lose it to AJ Styles, and that's the completion of their redo of the WCW Sting storyline. And I think that's where the wheels will begin to fall off that group. So I don't know where they go from here as far as the main event Mafia goes. I mean, you still got Sting, you got Magnus, Samoa Joe. I think that's it. There might be one more, I don't remember.
Rampage.
Rampage, yes. And that's another thing, if we want to continue to talk about some TNA news. Tito Ortiz making a slight ripple in the pond for TNA with his big debut. It's, at this point, the laughingstock of wrestling right now. I don't know what they were thinking, hyping him the way they did as this, you know, big, you know, return, basically. Because Tito Ortiz has worked with TNA in the past as a referee, you know, some special guest referee back in the early days. So I guess they're considering that as a former, him being on the roster at one point, I guess. Jesus Christ. Tito Ortiz, really? what do you think about old Tito?
I mean, I've never been a big Tito fan. I'm only mildly in the UFC, not nearly as much as I used to be. I haven't seen it yet. I'm always at least a week behind on Impact because I have to watch it on demand, and they wait a week to post the episodes. I did finally see Destination X, and I liked it. I thought it was really good. I don't hate on TNA nearly as much as most people do. Like, yes, they are very inconsistent and sloppy at times, but watching the show, I'm still entertained for the most part for the 2 hours that I'm watching. So that's a win in my book. As far as throwing all the kinks into the plan, I mean, maybe they're going to throw Tito in Kurt's spot. And obviously they're using TNA to kind of build towards what's sure to be a shitty fight between Rampage and Tito for Bellator at a pay-per-view. I don't remember when that is. I think maybe December. I'm not sure, though.
I'm not sure.
And so, I mean, maybe they'll go, like, the uneasy ally storyline, and they'll kind of work together to fucking try to put down Aces and Eights, and at the end, one of them will turn against the other. Or maybe not even at the end, maybe halfway through, and so they can build off that. If they were smart, I think that's kind of what they do, but it's TNA, they're not smart. Just try to ignore the story and enjoy some wrestling.
Exactly. I'm the same way. I don't hate on TNA, but when stuff like this comes up, you have to talk about it. It's
absolutely. No, I agree.
It is what it is.
As far as it being like the laughing stock of the internet, again, I haven't seen it. I can't judge. The way they promoted him was kind of stupid and lame. Like you said, he was a referee before. But I mean, I guess I kind of get it.
Yeah. Anyway, so moving on from TNA, not a whole lot much else to talk about on their front. We're going to move over to, did you ever get a chance to watch any of those the videos that were posted this week? The CM Punk's new thing he's doing with Nerdist, Nerdist.com.
No, I haven't yet. I got work like right in the middle of the day, so unless I really remember to, I forget to watch a lot of the stuff that gets posted in the day during the day.
Yes, and I have to give a big shout out to our homegirl in Ireland, Niamh. I would not have actually known about these had it not been for her pointing us in that direction during Raw last night in our thread at facebook.com/group/kayfabecorner, where you can, you know, join us on our threads each and every week. But she sent me over there, and I checked out some of these videos, and they're fucking hilarious. It's CM Punk basically letting you know that your grammar sucks. It's called CM Punk Grammar Slam, and I have brought some audio from one of the episodes. This one, he is talking about the difference between the different usages of the word there. And so go ahead and enjoy this, and we'll talk about it afterwards. Not that. Technical difficulties. There you go.
Hey, everybody. This is WWE superstar CM Punk. Welcome to Grammar Slam, where we read your tweets and your letters and correct your awful grammar. Tonight is a doozy. Maybe the biggest of them all. The difference between there, and there. And it's not just the spelling. All right, right into it. Today's email is from Chip. Sounds like a lovely chap. Hey, loser. Good start. My sister and her fat, dumb boyfriend say you'll get your title back. Any thoughts on how to tell them they're 100% totally wrong? Well, Chip, a couple come to mind. I hate to break this to you, Chip, but there is possessive. You needed to use there, T-H-E-Y apostrophe R-E. It's called a contraction. They are. Look, there's three forms of the word, T-H-E-R-E. It's the opposite of here, as in, you're not here, you're somewhere out there talking shit to me using improper grammar. And then there's there, the contractions, two words, T-H-E-Y apostrophe R-E, which is the f***ing form of there that you should have used. Is there any way to tell them that they're 100% totally wrong? There, T-H-E-I-R, is the form of the word that you use, and it's possessive. It's possessive, as in your sister and her fat, dumb boyfriend, their friendship, doesn't know how to use proper grammar. Their friendship, T-H-E-I-R, is a complete moron. Their friendship is going to get a beating, courtesy of CM Punk, if I ever see him. But I'm not going to see him because he's not here. He's there. All right, today's tweet. It's a real good one. Thumbs up for this doozy. CM Punk, can't wait to see The Rock destroy you this weekend. They're going to carry you out on a stretcher. Hashtag CM Week. Hashtag wrong. Hashtag stupid. Hashtag grammar. Hashtag why am I like this? I wish I was as stupid as you, whoever wrote this tweet. I wish I was dumb. I wish I lived in your ignorant world like a snow globe just full of stupidity. Hashtag, I'm going to punch you in the face. Hashtag, on your gravestone, I'm going to chisel in the proper use of the word there. T-H-E-Y apostrophe R-E. They are going to carry me out on a stretcher, but they're not.
So, what do you think of that?
I was trying really hard not to laugh and completely ruin the clip and best punk promo ever. I almost wet myself with glee.
Yes, I thought that you would enjoy that. Brett here is our resident grammar Nazi at Kayfabe Corner on the group, Kayfabe Corner / groups. I'm sorry, Facebook.com/groups/Kayfabe Corner. He likes to correct everybody. He's kind of a prick. So when I saw that,
I've been pretty lax lately. I've been letting up on some of you guys, and I think it's time to crack down. CM Punk completely inspired me. I watch your asses.
Yes. Hilarious stuff. There's actually five different videos. I watched them all today. I showed them to Bethany because she also, like you, is a complete grammar Nazi to the point of, you know, she'll make you feel bad about yourself and stuff. So she's a good person to have around, really. On that note.
Think about does it.
Yes, think if it does about do
think
it.
I think we're just about out of time, friend.
We are, which is going to lead us into our song of the week this week. Were you a fan of Test during his WWF run back in the day?
I really wasn't. I bet if I went back and watched some of his stuff now, I'd probably have a better appreciation than I did then, but no, at the time, no.
Yeah. Well, he was never, you know, the greatest wrestler. I'll have to actually start off by saying RIP, Andrew Martin, poor guy's dead now.
Yeah, I never want to see the guy die.
No, and I don't want to sit here and criticize his wrestling skills at this moment. But back in 98 when he debuted in WWF, he had probably what I would consider to be my favorite theme at the time. So that's what we're going to lead off or end off the show tonight for our Song of the Week. So this is Jeremy Staples saying have a good night. Anything you'd like to say to the people, Brett?
Night-night.
Night-night indeed. All right. Later, guys. Jerk off.